evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 16th, 2006 regular business meeting of the Carrboro Board of Aldermen. A few aldermen will be filtering into the room in the next couple of minutes. Alderman John Herrera called to apologize for the fact that he will be about 15 minutes late tonight. So we will expect him shortly. We begin tonight with requests from visitors and speakers from the floor. I don't think we have anybody signed up. Was there anybody who was here to speak on a matter that is not on our scheduled printed agenda? Okay. If not, at this time, could I ask Elena Kalamanis to approach the town clerk's desk?
I'll just read this to you and have you sign up on it. As a member of the Economic Sustainability Commission, you will evaluate commercial growth development and redevelopment to ensure projects correspond with the town's sustainability goals and the triple bottom line sustainability principles. To promote the development and expansion of diverse job opportunities, providing for economic opportunity and mobility. 3, administer the revolving loan fund. 4, work closely with the town manager or his designee for dealing with sustainability issues. 5, make studies and recommend to the Board of Aldermen plans, goals, and objectives relating to the growth, development, and redevelopment of the town. 6, recommend to the board site-specific plans for the commercial development of various lots within the town showing recommended types of development for these specific lots. 7, recommend to the board plans for the improvement of access to and circulation within the town by motorists, including parking, public transportation users, bicyclists, and pedestrians. 8, upon the request of the Board of Adjustment or Board of Aldermen, make recommendations to the respective board on requests for special or conditional use permits or land use ordinance text or zoning map changes. And 9, perform any other duties assigned by the board. If you agree, could I get you to sign that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Look forward to working on
you.
I am too.
Thank you.
And I have to apologize. My daughter's a senior at Chubb Hill High School, and it's her last band performance tonight.
Oh.
So I'm going off to that.
You better go.
Thank you for joining us.
Last band performance. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Is Joyce Beekman here? No? No. Okay. Well, we will read her charge another night. With that, Mr. Manager, the consent agenda.
Okay. Item 1 is approval of minutes of the previous meetings of April 25th, May 3rd, and May 9th. Item 2 is a request for a budget amendment for Earth Action Parade event. Item 3 is a request to accept the Intergovernmental Parks Work Group's composite countywide plan for parks and trails. Item 4 is award of construction contract for the sidewalk bond project phase 1. Item 5 is award of construction contract for the Roberson bike path. Item 6, award of construction contract for the Hannah Street Bowen Forest Drive sidewalk bond project. Item 7 is a resolution authorizing the issuance of $1,230,000 in sidewalk bond anticipation notes.
Move the items.
I just have a question before we vote on number 7.
Do it.
I just have a scheduling question. When do we anticipate issuing the bonds?
The bond anticipation notes will come due in March of 07. At that point, prior to that, we'll make a recommendation to the board as to whether or not we would renew the bond anticipation notes or actually issue general obligation bonds.
And can we have a discussion with that sometime after the budget? Before March. I'm just only asking this because I'm a little concerned about interest rates, that's all. And that's the only question I have. But I want it for a later discussion, not one now.
Okay.
Just to kind of
dovetail on that. The cost of concrete is just skyrocketing. Do we anticipate that cutting back at all and what we're going to be able to do? Because it seems to be going up like every couple months. It's really, really getting, isn't it, Mark? I mean, I know my husband's telling me that all the time. The concrete's just really getting up there.
Well, that's certainly likely, but you have on the consent agenda, you know, all the projects that have been bid to date, and assuming you all approve the consent agenda items, we'll start construction on all these projects, and we're continuing on with design of round two to bring to you all, hopefully, in the fall, George.
Okay. So what they've bid, regardless of what concrete does,
is
a firm price.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So may affect what we'll be able to do in later phases.
Yeah, it will, and the prices reflected here are certainly higher than what they were when the bond referendum was passed back in 2003.
Right. Okay. When we come back with the report, could you sort of let us know what percentage that was for each project?
Well,
in terms of higher than what they were previously estimated.
You know, we can do that, but it won't be a real good apples to apples because those numbers were based on very, very preliminary information. Again, we can do it, but it won't be a great comparison because we've done all the engineering work now that wasn't done with those cost estimates.
Okay. My only other request with just the sidewalk thing is just to have a report on what was dropped out, because there may be some places that we may need to look to change the order based upon the standards that we created, given the annexation.
Right. Okay. Just along those same lines, pleased to note that the Robertson Bike Path has finally gone out to bid and that we've got a hard bid on it. But your points are very well taken in that we had to move money around fairly quickly in order to get a successful bid on the project. So it's likely that that's going to continue.
Okay.
I have two corrections and a question on the minutes. On the April 25th minutes at the bottom of page 4, it says Alderman Cullen, blah, 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 a maximum of 70% on the affordable housing. And I thought I said a maximum of 80%. That was my intention anyway, so I'd like that correction to be made. And then on the May 3rd, on page 8, Alderman Colvin requested the town staff consider placing a summary of board actions on the town's website following board meetings. Actually, I said that I'd like the summary to be sent out on the listserv and to the media as well as placed on the website. If that correction could be made. And my question for the manager is, what does it mean when it says that you take the request under advisement? Does that mean you'll get back to us in terms of what
the request you just referred to? Yes, sir, we will be getting back. We've talked about it at the staff level. I haven't made a final determination, but it appears that for us it would be very difficult to do. As I mentioned when you asked that question, the town of Chapel Hill has a full-time public information officer,
right,
and that's her sole responsibility is to do those kinds of things. We don't have anybody on staff like that, and we already spend a lot of follow-up time on our weekly meetings, and to add that, I'm concerned about getting accurate information out in a timely fashion.
Okay. I wasn't asking you to answer it now, but thanks.
Okay. So are those corrections acceptable to the mover, which I think was Jackie, and who is the seconder on that? I guess it was Randy.
Yep. Actually, did.
Okay, great. All those in favor of the consent agenda with those corrections?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Passes unanimously. Mr. Manager, item D1, Tree City USA presentation.
Okay. The town of Carrboro has been named a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation to honor its commitment to its community forest. It's the 22nd year Carrboro has received this national recognition. Student winners of the poster contest are at the meeting and will be recognized by the town, and the posters will be on display. And George Sizer, Public Works Director, is at the podium. George.
Good evening, everyone.
Before we get started tonight, I want to thank the town staff and Public Works, especially Paul Helwig, who helped organize the event at Carver Elementary School, and also Carol Gross, I believe a teacher at the school, who helped coordinate the event. And I believe we have two of the poster winners here tonight. So maybe the third one will show up. This is the 22nd consecutive year that the town of Carver has been recognized as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Day Foundation. And in order to promote this commitment, our town meets four criteria, and that is to have a tree ordinance, which I believe is Article 5 of Chapter 7 in the town code, a tree board, which is one of the charges of the Appearance Commission. We have to have at least $2 per capita spent on tree care, and I believe we're at $3, something on that order. And we have to have an annual Arbor Day observance, which, again, was held this year at Carver Elementary School. Which is noticed here. It was April 27th, and it was I was not able to attend. I know the mayor was there, and it was a rainy day. And the tree was subsequently planted on the second day. But we did have some events, which I have some pictures of here. There was a witch hazel tree. We'll see the mayor receiving the Tree City USA flag. And then the students competed in a poster contest. And here is the mayor receiving Tree City USA flag, which we fly down daily down to Public Works. There we have some students reading the Arbor Day proclamation, and also, I believe, discussing the history of Arbor Day. In the center there is Paul Helwig, our landscape and ground supervisor, and I believe the woman to the right is Carol Gross, and then one of our students. And we had a visit from Smokey the Bear, a.k.a. Don Barber, Groundskeeper 1.
It's going to be me next year.
Be careful what you wish for. And here is a witch hazel tree, which was planted the following day when the sun came out. With that, I'd like to, if the mayor would help me, present some gifts to the Tree City USA folks that are here.
Now, perhaps it's worth mentioning who it was that judged the poster contest. Because it was a blind judging of the contest done by Carver Elementary School staff volunteers.
Great, thank you.
We'll just mention for reasons that will become clear.
Looks like girls.
All right, the third place winner was Riley Hutchison.
Yay!
It's also Riley's birthday today.
Aww. Happy birthday.
And show us your poster, please.
I'll let you use it.
Oh, that's beautiful, Riley.
It really is.
Riley is a fifth grader in Miss Fisher's class, is that correct? Great. All right, thank you. Second place, Miranda Poe. Miranda is a fourth grader in Mrs. McFarling's class.
Ooh.
Very nice. Very nice. Very nice.
All right. Thank you very much. And Juliana Ritter was the first place winner. I don't believe Juliana's here tonight, but Juliana Ritter is a fifth grader in Miss Fisher's class.
Good thing no boys won with
her. Yes. Anyway, thank you very much. Congratulations to all the participants. We look forward to another year for tree planting again.
And I'd also like to just personally say it was a really nice event. I know we've been doing it for a long time, and I thought our Public Works staff did a lot of great work to help make it such a nice event. Mr. Manager,
agenda item D2. Agenda item D2. Is there anybody here from the Orange County Peace Coalition? No. I don't know if y'all got my email late in the day today, but this matter was resolved. An anonymous donor put forward the money to pay for an insurance policy for the Peace Coalition to conduct the Memorial Day celebration, which will be a week from this coming Monday, May 29th, 2006, at the Town Commons. And so the Peace Coalition has withdrawn their request for us to co-sponsor the event since the insurance situation is resolved. But the members of the coalition did want to invite the public in general and also the members of the board in particular to come and participate in the event.
Move we delete the item with thanks to the Peace Coalition for working so well with our staff and the board and Mark.
So we are a bunch of tree-hugging peacenicks, aren't we? That's what our agenda tonight shows.
Pretty much. Is there a second for Alex's motion on that?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The matter passes unanimously.
Thanks to the anonymous donor.
Yes. Thank you, anonymous donor. Okay, and so item D3, report on Joint Advisory Board review of proposed architectural standards for downtown Carrboro.
Board of Aldermen held a public hearing on June 24th and February 21st, 2006. The board referred the draft ordinance for further consideration to several advisory boards. These boards have met jointly to review and make recommendations on the revised ordinance, and Trish McGuire, Planning Administrator, has a presentation to share with you all the recommendations from the advisory boards. Trish?
I do. Thank you very much, Steve. Good evening, everyone. Let's see here. Burying my folders. Okay, so that was the introduction. I think that Steve's introduction covered the background. The board did refer this draft ordinance from the public hearing to several advisory boards, and they held a joint work session a month and a half ago or so to review the draft ordinance and consider the comments that had been made during the public hearing. And they then set up a subcommittee to basically, this is just some background context on where the draft ordinance is proposed right now. But that subcommittee then of the main group of joint advisory board members met again to basically take the comments from that joint work session and make some recommendations on revisions to the draft ordinance. And so we are talking about a draft ordinance that is proposed to apply in the B1C, the B1G, the CT, the M1, and the B2 zoning districts. And they are shown in this map here on the screen in the more colorful areas. And, of course, there are two pieces of the M1 that don't lie directly in the downtown but are in close proximity to it. And the area that is affected by this draft ordinance is about 100 acres. So I'm going to go quickly through what was in the draft ordinance, and each slide will show you whether the committee proposed that it be kept or revised. Kept, rather revised, or deleted. Those are pretty much the options. So the language that was proposed earlier about a primary entrance, which is shown originally in the slide here, a little bit more detail, more specific language is shown in the revised text here in yellow. The change being that the language does still tie back into an entryway being either recessed or being delineated in some fashion by an awning, a detachable awning, but there's not any dimensional component to it. The similarity provisions that were in the draft ordinance, the group recommended against those being retained. So the draft that you all have does not include that language as recommended. Same with the proposed requirement for cornices and parapets. The transparency along streets provision is proposed to be modified from what was in the text previously. between 40 and 75% transparency requirement and a minimum for the ground level facade to just a 40% glass surface requirement on the building elevation visible from the street right-of-way. There was similar language in the draft ordinance with regard to transparency facing streets other than the main right-of-way. And the rear of buildings, the committee recommended removing that provision, as they did with the shade-free provision as well. The staff is recommending that the board consider, if moving forward with this revised draft, retaining that particular provision. There were revisions to the parking amount and location of parking language that's in the draft. It was in the public hearing draft, and the subcommittee of these three advisory boards proposed instead a habitable building space requirement in front of any parking or utility space at the building elevation visible from the street right-of-way. So it's a little bit less. There isn't a percentage requirement as was previously proposed in both of the provisions dealing with parking, with covered parking. The facade articulation, breaking the building up into components of no more than 45 feet in length, the committee decided they didn't feel that was necessary. Proposed its removal.
Could you go back to that
side? Sure.
This one on the right, are those 45 feet?
And then
the inset? Does that have
I think 45 feet
across?
Well, the way the language, I'm not sure that one actually. I think that actually does measure about 45 feet. It would be the main break in this building. So
to the recess.
So the recess would count as a break.
Thank you.
There, based on the way the language was written previously, I didn't measure all of those out as illustrations for this, but yeah. The subcommittee proposed a change to the exterior materials requirement. As shown here, essentially the previous language called for several architectural materials or a brick, metal, cementitious wood-like siding to be as required exterior on buildings in the downtown. And the committee took a different approach, which was to propose some prohibited materials, including metal siding with exposed fasteners, vinyl siding, and processed wood panel products, not wood lap siding kind of products or cementitious wood-like siding and so forth. They were in support of the voluntary alternative process being retained so that if an applicant didn't meet meet the architectural standard, that they could then go to the Appearance Commission for consideration. They were fine with the information submittal requirements. They did propose in the section at the end of the draft ordinance that was removing some language in several zoning district definitions with regard to architecture and exterior materials for the B1G, the B2, and the CT zoning districts. The subcommittee felt that the B2 language should be retained because of its reference to similarity to residential structures. Existing residential structures. The staff recommendation is that the board consider adoption of this revised draft ordinance with the retention of the 20% shade-free provision. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
Could you go back to the slide? I'm sorry, I didn't raise my hand.
No, go ahead.
Could you go back to the slide?
Get my mouse here.
Not the pictures. It's to the hardwood. The prohibitive.
Sure.
I had a question about that. No, you almost had it.
Oops,
go back three. I'm sorry. There, stop there. Could someone give me the basis for the processed wood panel products, e.g. hardboard? Because when you say things like that, I'm thinking, well, what is that?
What is that?
That's going to be sheets of wood panel materials, like plywood is an example of a wood panel product, but
okay.
Of some others that have manufactured names associated with them, Masonite,
T111. T111, like the big
examples like that.
Big
but
sheets
they have
of grooved plywood and that type of
grooved
thing.
Grooved plywood.
Oh, okay. So it's not
it can
like
be smooth as well.
Plank.
Hardy plank would be okay.
Hardy plank is a plank material.
Well, that's
plank,
a cementitious wood-like siding, so that would be
that's
okay.
Correct.
Cementitious.
Trust me.
And then I have actually another question, a follow-up. Well, not on this one, but on you had a slide that the 40%.
The window glass windows. Mm-hmm. Openings? Okay.
Now, I know exactly what my next question is. What do you mean by habitable?
Yeah. Oh, we had a discussion about the need to debate, I mean, to decide that. Well, to define that. And the committee decided not to propose a definition of it. But yeah. they were. It was going to be usable space where people would be. There would be human activity regularly, not for storage, not utilities, not heating and air conditioning kinds of things, or refrigeration or things like that. But an area where there would be office space, either people living or working.
But it could be
space.
Lobby for the building.
Could be absolutely lobby stairwells were fine. But closets and storerooms and HVAC areas were not considered to be habitable.
Does it have to be an enclosed space? I mean, like, could it be a patio for a cafe is habitable?
That's a very good question. I don't think they explored that. They definitely talked about stairwells, even open stairwells, as being, being appropriate. So I guess, I mean, by association, I think you could make that. If you wanted to make that explicit, though, you could say enclosed or partially enclosed, something like that to address that.
If we don't define it in the ordinance, then I would encourage there to be examples for people that come and they read this and they go, well, what does that mean?
People like us.
I'm really big on defining what's in a statute lately. And I won't say why.
The more she has to read.
If two of us ask the reason and two of us have a law degree, so and then third person asks that doesn't have a law degree, I think you need to give people, I'm all about giving people notice of what we are thinking about, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm done.
Dan.
You want us to develop a definition of habitable then?
A description, okay. Habitable can include but does not exclude,
Okay. With examples.
I have two questions.
Dan and then Jackie.
Could you describe the pros and cons of the shade-free area debate in terms of what the Joint Committee, why they want to delete it and why the staff wants to include it?
Well, I think the biggest argument that was made for not keeping it was the expectation that, the rights of way in Carrboro, range in the downtown range in size from a little over 40 feet to in the range of 60 feet or so, and in some cases they're wider. A few instances they're wider than that. But the, with installing sidewalks and some other things like that along the streetscape, there were a couple of members of the group that argued or presented their opinion that buildings wouldn't be tall enough to kick in to shade 80% of the right of way because they were using a multiplier for stories that was based on the multiplier they were using for the stories, and the staff's position was, the ordinance currently doesn't have a standard multiplier for the height of a story, and so a building might not fit into each story is 12 feet, and therefore 5 stories times 12 is equal to 60 feet, and therefore, this won't be a problem if they set the building back a few feet to get a 10-foot sidewalk in front of it and that sort of thing. The staff's position was that, rather than sort of leave it out with the opportunity that someone could actually make a taller building and result in this shading situation, we could leave it in, and then it would be addressed as part of development plans, and it might not apply to many. But but it might apply to one that would otherwise, either shade a building across the street or shade the sidewalk entirely, for a month or two in the between August and only for a part of the day, not all of the day, because obviously we're moving, the earth is moving, the sun, the shadows are moving. But the staff's position was that it was addressing something that wasn't currently addressed. It had been discussed on numerous occasions in meetings, the public speaking about this question, members of the Board of Aldermen, and raising it as a concern, and so we felt that it did provide some opportunity to review it and to deal with it.
Thanks. Could you go back to the slide about the glass percents? I'm curious, has there been any discussion about, we're looking at, the removal of the provision for a certain percent of ground level glass. Was that discussed? I assume that was discussed. And
it was.
What's the rationale for recommending removing that?
Overall, the desire was to, I think if you were to kind of capture all of, or characterize all of the recommendations, they were to provide somewhat less specificity, more flexibility with regard to a development proposal. And this one was right there. The committee felt, the members of the advisory boards and the subcommittee felt that we were just dictating too much specificity and that shouldn't be included. And with regard to they went back actually in the subcommittee because there was a meeting that you attended, one prior to that, discussed whether or not they should go back and put the 60% in, and the feeling was to have more flexibility and to I don't think I can explain it further than that.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say
that's
what I recall from their discussion, mm-hmm. and that they just wanted to have a minimum 40%. Obviously, it can be greater than that for the entire facade, but to not to lock it in.
Okay.
I hope that helps.
Jackie.
Can we go back to the parking one, please?
Sure.
Thank you. What I am, one of my top two things that I really, really, really want to avoid is any parking with a building that you can see as you're walking down the sidewalk. Because that just really detracts from the feeling of downtown. This doesn't do that, does it? So if the right-of-way is in front, then it's saying that the parking has to be in back?
Yes.
Okay. But a lot of the backs of the buildings are also, you see them, have sidewalks on them. So, if a building is surrounded by sidewalks and places where people are walking, then really don't want that either. But that might not be possible to get.
Hmm.
That might not be possible to get.
Well, I don't know if that's possible or practical. I mean, if you put the parking in the back, somebody's in the back and they're
right.
going to see the parking,
right.
whether there's a sidewalk or not.
But I think it can be designed so that the parking is really not that visible, even if it's part of the structure.
Well, I guess the issue is we don't want to make it too difficult. I know what you want to prohibit, and that's fine, but if this is sort of a compromise, I guess my thinking is you don't want to make it so difficult that people can't
do anything. Exactly.
And so I think you have to bounce,
I had several.
I'd like to say one thing, and that is this: the language doesn't say, it doesn't restrict it to only one right-of-way, mm-hmm. right, currently. To the extent practicable, there is going to be some, not practical issues, but practical ones. So,
practical.
There may be no way to put any parking under the building if they have to enclose it entirely, and yet then, it's all, I think it's, we'll be weighing a variety of things. Do you want to give up commercial square footage and put all the parking outside of the building? And so
we've seen a concept plan for one possible development that occupies an entire city block and it has public right-of-way, paved, named streets on all four
right.
sides of it. So I wonder how you would interpret that in requirement in that context.
Well, I think that there would have to be some reasonableness piece to it, too, that's not spelled out here. I guess I defer to Mike on that on that question. But when the applicants, when the designer for that particular project, when they were looking at this language, they were like, originally they were going to put the pull-down doors that can provide a screen from all that. And then I think that there's still, Marty's here, I know, and he might remember this conversation, but, you know, it's a concern. I mean, I don't know if I can characterize it any more in a more detailed way, but it's going to be, it will be difficult for a site that is completely surrounded by right-of-way as that one particular property is. Again, you know, there's also room, I guess, to interpret this somewhat more narrowly. So maybe you pick a principal facade or pick two. The intent was clearly, from what the board said and all the folks who came, the work set, you know, participants of the work session, and what folks in the community said, too, was to screen it, was to do exactly as you said.
Right. So,
was to not
so
make this
I really
visible
want us
from
to stick by that
sidewalk. So if there's any ambiguity and you'd like that to be more cleared up, we can explore it further. We've been talking about that, the Andrews Rigsby property, and in talking with Mike about how far we can go with it for a site that is would really be affected significantly by it.
My other issue was I would like to keep the similarity clause. I don't think similar means exact, but I think similar is important. I'd like to keep the similarity clause. And then also in the piece that talks about having concept reviews. Do we have a slide on concept reviews? I know we have a lot
I
of
I did
info.
Not make a slide for the concept
okay.
review recommendation.
That was, to me, that was an important part of what they were recommending. But I would like to add to that.
I can put it up here on the overhead.
Yeah, in their recommendation of May 10th, they say applicant submits illustrations of principal floor plan and building elevation at a minimum. Applicant provides other materials as needed to demonstrate the concept of the proposed project. To me, a floor plan and a building elevation don't really tell me much about what it's going to look like. I mean, you can have the same floor plan and elevation and a million different designs. So I would like, if we pass this, I'd like some changes, but I would like for the for in that review, and I presume that's what they're talking about as a concept review in number four, right? It's not really, yeah. I would like to have and some kind of design sketches so that we have I'd like to say reasonable idea of the appearance of the building.
Yes. What is the staff's? What do you mean by the word elevation? I guess
it would be an exterior. It would probably be multiple exterior facades of the building. The elevation of the side of what the building looks like. A drawing of the building, of the side views of the building. So you.
So
can
would
see
that include like the architect? I mean, sort of the.
Architectural
show us
detailing.
What kind of the details and the and what the materials look like and that sort of thing.
Architectural parlance and elevation is just that. It is a detailed sketch which shows the facade, either the primary or any other facades, and what the architectural detailing looks like.
Well, I'm a social worker, and I know all kinds of words that don't have anything to do with this, or they do, but in a more interesting context. I think that because other social workers and teachers and other people who don't have a planning or an architect's background will be reading this, particularly neighbors and members of the downtown community. Maybe if we could use, I know we have to use formal language, but if we could also use some more layman's language. So building elevation, and if maybe it's just in parentheses, it would say, including design and architectural details, then when the chair of a committee that doesn't have an architectural background reads it, then they'll know what it is they have a right to be expecting.
That's not a problem.
Social workers included.
This would have to be drawn up into an ordinance form, and this is not really, certainly not here before you for action this evening.
Right.
We accept action, meaning if you're interested in doing it, we would have to draft up an ordinance that incorporated it. And I think you're correct, we probably would need some sort of either description or definition of what building elevation means.
I am done for. Well, and I was Yeah, I'm done for now.
Okay.
I've done mine. You can go next.
He's already been one time.
So have I.
You're sitting closer to me.
Okay, then. just as a thought for the board, when we impose additional time constraints, then I think we need to find a way in any drafted ordinance to define things so that they're precise enough that people can check certain things off. Mm-hmm. That is, everything that you can check off that you can bring to the process, then I think, and it's more of a performance standard, look at it. That is, do they follow A, B, C, D, E, and F? And I would ask for that request because, on the one hand, I'm going to say what my constitutional law professor kept telling us all the time, that no right is absolute, that our police power is not so absolute that we can require everything, and the owner's rights aren't so absolute that he can throw up anything. So I think we need to come up with more of a balance, in my opinion. And that balance, to me, is to be able to tell people, if you have A, B, C, D, E, and F, then we qualify, and these are the only things that we're going to look at. So I'm arguing for more defined preciseness in the ordinance in whatever shape or form it comes in terms of some of these definitions. It's all right. We'll see how it works. We'll see if anything is built. I think we may have to come and revisit it again. With any ordinance, I'd like to have a review on really how it works, because I don't think we do enough of that. So I think that would be all my comments for right now.
Okay. Let's go.
Please, briefly, how does these recommendations help us, those of us who don't build buildings and don't know the details of energy conservation? I know we want things to look the way we want them to look and to be within the character that we want them to be. Do you think these recommendations allow us or push us, promote energy conservation when it comes to the percentage of transparent facades and all that? And the second question is, I understand people, we don't like to see parking lots and things that we don't like to see in downtown, but do this ordinance also ensures and promotes access to handicapped folks, if it's going to be a building where folks are going to be residing there and you have to pull a van and get off, with your wheelchair and as close as possible to the elevator. How educate me about, does it comply with all that? Does it move us forward, environmentally speaking, towards energy conservation? Does it matter with what we have now and what we're going to might change? And, yeah.
This ordinance, I don't think, really... I think it's neutral with regard to energy conservation. It's not promoting a particular design that is, that is dealing with daylighting or having lower utility costs or a number of other materials that are, that are harvested or in a sustainable fashion in a certain distance from the. It doesn't do any of those things. So I would say there are some issues with glazing and transparency that can be very good depending on your exposure. So there, maybe okay as far as that goes in certain angles of directions, alignments of a building, the 40% glass may work with regard to that. But I don't think it truly addresses it. And I would say the same is true as the handicapped issue is going to be one that is addressed through the building code. It's not addressed here. It wasn't considered as part of the charge for drafting this or in the discussions about it. But
if a person wanted to build a building out of some innovative, environmentally sensitive materials or with some design that don't necessarily meet this standard because of some environmental objective that they have or whatever. There is a process here.
That's right.
So they can come and say, well, let me explain. You know, I need my solar panels like this, and I need, you know, my building to be arranged in this certain fashion in order
for it to work. 40% is too much glazing because of where my building is facing with regard to the right-of-way or, you know, something like that, yes.
There is a they have an alternative method for approval, but they have to come and explain why they want it.
That's right.
Okay.
So it does, yeah, it does provide flexibility in that. Right. Thank you.
Alex.
I think Trish responded to some of the questions pretty well. I think Jackie's point about the parenthetical reference describing what an elevation is makes sense for lay people looking at it, although a building elevation is, at least from the standpoint of our review process and from an architect standpoint, that's a clear term. It's not squishy. An elevation is what you describe. So, but a parenthetical reference describing
it,
unless it further muddies the waters, makes sense. Having sat in on the first of these work sessions, I did not sit in on the subcommittee's discussion. There was substantial discussion about the whole similarity clause, and the problem that a lot of folks saw with that clause was that there are architectural designs and schemes that we're trying to promote in this ordinance. There are quite a number of structures that encompass architectural features that are, shall we say, not encouraged within this ordinance. And if your ordinance language says that you should essentially follow the architectural characteristics of adjoining structures, that puts you into something of a box. And you may, in fact, end up combining the worst of both worlds. And the feeling was that the provisions within the ordinance provided, or as revised, I should say, essentially establishing a series of architectural parameters render that A, unnecessary, and B, perhaps undesirable. So that was, and of course, if any of the folks who participated in that discussion think I'm mischaracterizing it, let me know. But that's how I came off of that. So I agree with their reasoning to remove that provision.
Can I respond to that?
Go ahead, and then
because so many of the so much of the prescriptive language has been knocked out based on their recommendation. I think the similarity clause, it doesn't say exact, it says similar, gives us some degree of design protection.
Yeah, similar to what? That's the whole problem. And if you do an inventory of what's there, there's a lot of the what that, frankly, if it were done on a somewhat larger scale, I would speculate that you would be the first to be upset by it. So
it doesn't say exact, but if that's taken out, then there really is no prescriptive language. The other thing I wanted to suggest was that we are taking this to public hearing, even though in the packet it says that the staff wanted us to pass it tonight. It sounds like if we make changes, we would need to go to public hearing, wouldn't we?
We had a public hearing on this before. This really is right. This nub and mud. But no, I don't really think that the changes are significant. Most of the changes are deletions rather than additions, and the new language is modified. What I was talking about, a new public hearing, was something that had not been addressed at all, which is the concept plan review.
Okay.
I mean, you could either pass it tonight or not. That's up to you.
Yeah,
but I find the
concept plan review to be integral to the entire thing. I'd like us to pass it, including the concept plan, which sounds like we'd have to move on, but that we put a two-year review, a two-year automatic review on this, because we have a two-year automatic review on our three stories or above downtown permit. So I think that the two could fit in very, very nicely, just reviewing the two together after 2 years.
Alex, I think you had another point.
Yeah, the remainder. I think Trish touched on the energy conservation issue, it needs to be stressed that that's beyond the scope of what this was designed to address. This was designed to address the aesthetic concerns that have arisen out of the changes that we've made in our downtown height regulations. And that's a whole different matter. And, I mean, I think there was even discussion at our retreat about, again, looking at green building techniques and all that sort of thing. And that's perfectly reasonable, but that's entirely beyond the scope of this discussion. Let's see. Yeah, and Mark, you actually covered, that an essential portion of this whole scheme, if you will, is the alternative review process, in which case, if you decide you don't want to do any of this stuff, here's another way that you come in the door with something that may be very different, but it entails more risk because it is inherently more subjective in how it's administered. But that two-tiered process, I think, deals with that series of issues. I'll just put it this way. I think that the product that the advisory boards in this joint effort put together is a really workable product and is finally something that we can use, which addresses, I think, in large measure the concerns that have been raised from the beginning, but again provides a level of flexibility and creativity to prevent what Francis Shetley has referred to as the toy town effect. And so I think it's a good piece of work, and with just a couple of the items mentioned, we ought to move forward with it.
Okay. I have a general point, a particular point, and a tangential point. So my general point is that I'm concerned about the move to put flexibility into the standards that where it has been told us is behind a lot of these recommendations. To me, the flexibility is the alternative review process. And so we have a standard that gets us something that we think is kind of like what we want. And as we've heard, and as Alex was just saying, it's really hard to predict that, but, we're doing the best we can. And developers who want to do something different have the alternative review process, which is not an onerous process. It should be a very helpful process to them as well as to us. So I would like to refocus in that direction. The particular point has to do with, I'm going back to this question of breaking up the facade of the buildings, because I'm sitting here looking at sort of the sum of some of these recommendations that we've received tonight and imagining a 90-foot long build, a two-story building with no articulation along the front, no windows on the ground floor, and a single recessed doorway as being, the only point of change in that whole thing. And it's hard to imagine that that's a building we would want. And it could potentially, be a taller building as well, although I think, if my understanding of the process is right, that then we would have more to say about it on a taller building. But so that's my way of saying that I think we need to keep some of these stronger standards in there. And, I would do that by way of hoping that it encourages developers to participate in the alternative review, because I really want to see creativity in our downtown. But I want to do it in a way that has a lot of interaction with our advisory boards and ourselves and the citizens. My tangential point, Trish, is you said there was nothing in this to speak to energy issues. And do I understand correctly that we don't have any stipulation to do with allowing daylighting, accessibility to sunlight for adjoining buildings in our ordinance? Is that
allowing that?
Yeah, requiring it. Requiring that adjoining buildings not have, have a certain amount of access to sunlight.
No,
that it's not obscure.
No, there are zero setbacks in much of the downtown.
Uh-huh.
Depending on what one, it depends on what one building does, how it might affect another. in terms of the building code, there are provisions for building separation and openings, types of openings and so forth, based on how close the building would come to a property line or into another building. Our ordinance doesn't have a standard or a specific, a specific standard with regard to that, no. I mean, I think I would say the expectation in, well, there's one, I guess a second point, but the expectation in much of the downtown is that buildings will, it will be zero lot line, that they'll share the property line, that they'll build to it, with the exception of the shade-free provision, which would you know, ensure across the street, across the right-of-way, along certain alignments, that there would be access to sunlight.
Yeah,
but for adjoining buildings, like there's not that.
There are two key surfaces or that where solar accessibility is important, either the south or on the roof. And I'm not asking for it in this context, but I'm wondering if in the revision of the land use ordinance, if we can look at the possibility of a provision to protect access on a building-by-building basis for at least one of those, either the roof or the south facing, because I think in the future solar access is going to become more and more important for, you know, for business as well as for residents.
Randy and then Jackie.
Yeah, I really appreciate that this process that the subcommittee pulled together, because it was excellent, and it actually really underscores the value of the collaboration. I, too, was concerned about the deleting the requirement for breaking the facade at 45 feet, because I also started to vision these long, unbroken facade facings. So I wanted to caution on where that would leave us. I support the concept review plan. I think that's really important, and the alternative review process for creativity. I think we really need to be looking forward. We have no idea where that's going to, what kinds of things are going to come out of some of the new technologies and directions that we're going. I had a question about the could you go back to the shade picture, the 20-foot? Okay, clarify for me one more time with the recommendation that staff is making using the...
Well, the recommendation of the staff is to keep this provision in the draft ordinance.
Okay.
And so to establish a requirement that if your properties that have east and west boundaries, property boundaries, that lines be extended from those, and that the building, you take the angle of the sun at the autumnal equinox, September 21st, and that shadow is projected out onto the right-of-way in front of the building, and 80% of that, between those eastern and westernmost lines, has to be shade-free at noon.
Wasn't that not originally 40%? Or?
No, it's... Okay. It's 80% can be in shadow, okay. 20% is shade-free.
Okay.
As this is drafted.
Last week I admitted to making my first mistake ever in 17 years. Tonight I want to be really cautious that I don't make another one, and I don't want the town to make another one. I've been sitting here rethinking what's in front of us. What staff is recommending is a bare minimum. These are our minimum standards for a non-ugly building, and something that we feel like we can live with in our downtown. What staff's recommendation and the ordinance, if we pass it the way staff is recommending it, would give us is an assurance that things are going to be at least okay. It also provides an opportunity for things to be great. It says, if you don't want to go with these standards, then come back to us and show us what you got, and we'll tell you how much we like it or don't like it. So it doesn't lock people in to having to do the prescribed standards. Because, you know, as Trish said, it's just 100 acres. It's a very small area. One more ugly building and we can have like an ugly downtown. So what I'd like to do is backtrack on what I said a little while ago and pass staff's recommendations with the recommendation that we revisit this in 2 years at the same time that we revisit the regulation that anything three stories and over has to come before us. And so between the two of those, I think as we enter into this period of downtown redevelopment, we're giving ourselves some assurance that it can happen in a good way. That's not to say that the recommendations that we've been given from this group of designers who know a lot more than the social worker about how things should look aren't valid. And I think that there are ideas that folks can look at, and we can present that as kind of an alternative. So these are our recommendations. These are some alternative ideas. If you go with some of these ideas along with your own ideas, then you need to come before and explain it and have that end in a two-year period.
Alex?
That sounds like a perfectly reasonable approach. There are a couple of, I think, outstanding issues, though, that we need to resolve just within this language before we go ahead and do that. I have no problem with the two-year review idea. I think that makes perfect sense, which is, one, the question of habitable building space and how we define that. I think we need to nail that down before we put this into place. Second is an issue that Dan brought up, which is that the revised glass or glazing percentage does not address the amount of glazing at the ground level. And the level of transparency at the ground level, I think, as Dan pointed out, is something that we really want to preserve. That's very important.
Alex, you know, what I'm talking about here is the staff recommendations, not the committee recommendations.
Right, but the staff recommendation.
Okay.
Include.
No, I just wanted to make, because you were going along with me, I just wanted to make sure that.
Well, just to make sure that we're talking about.
I just want to make sure you understood.
I'm talking about the assumptions and inferences.
I'm talking about the latest staff recommendation, which includes the committee recommendations.
I got you.
Right?
Okay.
We good with that?
Okay.
Along with the 20% shade-free area. That's
okay.
That's the only addition that staff has proposed.
Okay.
But then there are these two other issues:
habitable building space and glazing percentage at ground.
And glazing percentage at ground floor. The solution to the glazing percentage at ground floor would simply be to reinsert the language with a minimum of 60% of the ground level facade that was already there. I think that
is that what
attachment I'm on what? Attachment A2. Pagination would be really handy here, gang.
No, wait a minute, Alex. I'm not.
Yeah, page 2 of attachment.
I'm not sure that you are following what I'm saying.
I'm
talking about not staff's recommendation tonight. I'm talking about what Dan's talking about, which is the original recommendations from staff.
I see. Well, if that's what we're talking about, then we're not.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Okay.
Because that gives us a bare minimum, and that we take these new recommendations and offer them as kind of an alternative within the same package. And wait a minute. So we say this is what would be easy to pass. Okay? If you have other ideas, and they could include some of, you know, here's some kinds of other ideas. If you have other ideas, then you can come and present them and get them approved. But the original recommendations by staff, I want to go with for 2 years because they give us some security, and I'm making Steve crazy. I'm sorry.
I just want to be real clear. The staff recommendation on the original ordinance was to refer it to the economic development consultant. We did not recommend to the board that be adopted.
Okay. So let's say not the previous staff recommendation, but what you mean is the previous proposal that was before us.
Thank you, Mayor.
Which was not immediately recommended for adoption by staff. Okay. But, Alex, could you finish your point?
Yeah.
Procedurally,
what I'm going to suggest is that we don't have a product that we can pass right now, but that my motion would be to direct staff to prepare a definition of habitable building space based on the discussion that we have, change the language discussing the glazing percentages to re-include, if you will, the language referring to a minimum of 60% at the ground level facade. And Dan expressed a preference for reinserting the requirement for changing facades at 45 feet. I understood the logic for deleting that, but in the interests of seeing if we can get something that'll pass, I'm willing to go ahead and have that reinserted.
So what struck through there in the middle of page A2, basically 10/9 and 11/10, also struck through there.
Yeah.
Are basically those two, reinstating those two requirements. Okay.
Just 11/10.
No, simply 11/10. That's it.
Right.
None of those.
The new number two.
Right.
Is 10/9, if you will, isn't that the glazing at the ground floor?
That's the park. That's about parking inside the building. That had two parts to it.
Right.
If you look up at the top of the page.
Well, 109 is somewhat, 109 duplicates the language at the end of 265.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't read all the way to the end of that sentence.
So you've got to, to make it consistent, you have to reinsert it.
No, I just got excited about 60%. Sorry.
Mark, on 110, would we be including A through E also?
I'm assuming.
Okay.
I'm wondering if on the habitable, might it not be as easy as saying that the habitable space and the parking should be separated by a wall? And then we don't have to say what habitable means, and we get our desired goal, which is to not have the parking visible?
Sure.
Does that work for you all?
Under what circumstance would
we? Well, if that's the case, why wouldn't you just be able to put a wall that was you couldn't see the parking through it? I mean, the idea, to carry that forward, the idea was to put some people activity in the space between the street and the parking. So
habitable,
so that you would not
habitable
see
space rendering any such parking invisible from the principal right of way.
The desire was not to see the parking,
yeah,
but the desire
it.
Was
that
to have
it.
People in front of it. So there'd be activity on the street level.
And the word habitable isn't sufficient to... Well, that was Joel's concern. She wants to know what happened.
Joel,
okay.
Not necessarily.
I can.
We just don't have.
No, I just. You know, while we're kind of working on this, I would prefer a very clean copy that I could read, so I know what I'm voting on. I'm just going to have to tell y'all just that way. I don't think we all know what we're voting on with all these changes.
Okay. Well, I took Alex's comment as a motion that we send this back to the staff for the three changes that
It was in the form of a motion.
Okay,
so
I'll second that.
Yeah.
All right, so the motion that's before us is to send this back to the staff for three changes. One, to add some type of definition of habitable building space. Mm-hmm. Two, to return to having a glazing percentage at ground floor requirement. And three, to reinstate 10/11. In the middle of page A2 about the 45-foot facade.
What 11 are you referring to?
Well, it says.
He's on page A2 in the middle.
11/10.
11/10.
It's called 11/10.
I think it was formerly 10 at one time, and then later it was 11, and both of them are struck through. Anyway.
But Mark,
that's
does that
provision.
Also
right.
Mark, just to clarify, does that also include the suggestion for the minimum of 60% at ground level?
It does.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's habitable building space, glazing, 60% glazing at ground level, and the breaking up of the facade in 45 feet to insert or reinsert those provisions and bring this back to us for
action or
consideration. So that's been moved and seconded. Dan?
Yeah, I just want to go, if you all don't mind, go back to the question of similarity. And I know there's a lot of detail in here that may not, you know, that may be more than we want. But, I mean, my question is, if we don't stipulate similarity, then, you know, what are we going to get? We're going to get dissimilarity or similarity. You know, if we say similarity in some way, at least we've got a shot at getting something that is has some coherence with what's already there. Mm-hmm.
Point wasn't that in as many instances as not, what's already there doesn't comply with what we're putting together. And so if we're asking them to replicate what sucks when we've already defined what doesn't, that puts us in a rather difficult position.
But they can have it reviewed.
Well,
But why should they have to go to alternative review when we know it doesn't comply with the minimum standard or the what we have defined as what we want? I mean, that's like, and my only best example of that is if I have a building next to that's a whorehouse, I don't want to make my building look like a whorehouse just because it was there first.
Well, unless it's really nice looking.
Objectification of women, I wouldn't want it to look like that. So that's kind of an extreme example, but I've been in meetings all day.
One is architecture.
Right, and one is, yeah.
One
so,
is not.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, that's, you know, the similarity. You may not want a building to be similar. Under that definition, you make up what you don't want because it's next to a building you don't like.
Well, and there are buildings in Carrboro that are very quaint, and we've become very accustomed to them in our history here, but would we want to replicate them necessarily? Maybe not.
It says four. It doesn't say all of them. It says four of them. So you don't have to make it exactly like you can choose four of them, which you can do cleverly and interestingly. So it's not saying it has to be exactly like it.
I can't support that. I can be outvoted, but I can't support it right now.
Okay, well, procedurally, where we would be is that basically somebody could offer unfriendly amendment, and we can vote on the possible amendment to reinstate the 4 of 9 similar features language. But somebody would need to move that, and I'm not going to entertain any more debate without a motion on it.
Somebody can move that we reinstate that?
That we add that to... involuntarily add that to Alex's motion.
Well, I would like to move that we involuntarily add that to Alex's motion.
Okay.
I'll second.
All right. Do we need any further discussion about the matter?
Kind of question.
All right. So it's been moved that we reinstate the 4 of 9 similarity requirement as a part of Alex's motion. All those in favor of adding back in the similarity requirement signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
Nay.
The matter, nay, I guess. The matter passes, the matter fails, 5-2. And we're back to the main motion, which is to send this back to the staff for redrafting to include habitable building space definition, glazing percentage, 60% of the ground floor, and reinstating the facade breakup.
Does it have the 2-year
requirement?
Sunset? Does it have the 2-year?
And I guess we want
review?
A 2-year
review
clause.
Sure.
That would be good.
I can
okay.
Do that.
Yep.
All right. So there it is.
And four elements.
Yeah. all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. Amazingly.
Reluctantly.
Okay. So we will look forward, I guess, to one more discussion of this matter.
First of many.
So let me ask the staff a question. Do you think that we can bring this back before our summer break? Because I would like to dispose of. I don't think anything we talked about is all that extensive.
The language is basically there.
The habitable building space definition or examples is the only part that you need to.
I think everything else is just plugging back in what's already been out there.
Okay, so if we could please try to get that back here before we go on break so we can be done with this.
I have a question because maybe I didn't understand what we were just voting on. Did that include this recommended process for the alternative review? Because I thought that was something we were going to discuss.
Well, I think that issue is still before us.
It is, okay.
Right. So...
But I'd like to have that come back at the same time because we can't pass one without the other.
Right. Well, I think that what the attorney is telling us is that we would need a separate hearing on that. Is that true?
Yes.
That's the shortest and most definitive thing I've ever heard a lawyer say.
No.
It wasn't a complaint.
It's consistent with that motion that was just adopted. I mean, the intent, of course, is that this is going to be a part of a package which includes the alternative review process. So do you need a motion to draft that and
I think
schedule
we,
a public hearing? So moved.
Yes.
Second.
So been moved and seconded that we move toward instating that procedure as well.
Substantially as it has been presented in this
document. Yes. I think so.
So you don't want to discuss particulars until after the public hearing?
Well,
not now.
Because I have some concerns.
I'm happy to hold them
until, date uncertain.
Well, we're glad to make you happy then. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed. Matter passed unanimously. And so now let me clarify. I don't think that's going to make it back to us on the same time frame that the other thing I just requested would.
The earliest public hearing would be the June hearing, which will be the last meeting before break.
So the second part of this package would be up for adoption presumably sometime this fall.
Yeah.
Does the board want to have both of those items together?
Yeah.
No, let's get this first one put to bed.
No.
We can add.
Well, we're only going to have a vote on that then.
Because, let me give you
the other one.
Yep, go ahead.
When we passed the building heights ordinance, we kept saying, oh, we've got to put some neighborhood protection in there. And it took years to put neighborhood protection in there.
It didn't take that long.
It took two years. It took 2 years.
And it did not. And the thing didn't build over three stories
Let me finish my thought, please.
All right, well.
No.
So with that in mind, I would like us to pass these at the same time.
Let's put that to a vote then.
Okay, so I don't know that we need a motion particularly, but could we just see a show of hands whether we're willing to consider these items separately or whether we need both of these to come back to us together. So
that's not a show of hands.
Do we need them to come back to us?
Can I ask one question?
Well, obviously, we don't need to do anything about any of it, but what is the board's pleasure?
Let me offer you this. I mean, if we go ahead and adopt the package that we've just cobbled together now, what we're adopting is the more prescriptive of the two pieces of the package.
So
if we put that in place and then go ahead and construct the more flexible, squishy, if you will, alternate procedure, then I think, frankly, that's consistent with the interests that are being expressed here. And if not, I can't view it as anything but sabotage.
You can do it however you want. It's not sabotage.
Okay, well... Here, okay.
Excuse me. Can I just clarify based upon what Alex said? The alternative procedure is built into the ordinance that you've already held a public hearing and it's coming back before you. That does not need a public hearing. The separate thing you're talking about here, as I understand it, is a separate concept plan review process for submitting projects. This is a separate thing. It may be somehow related, but it's a separate concept.
Well, it's related because what it does is establish. It essentially establishes a procedure to get that upfront input, which we don't really have in the current process.
I guess what I'm saying is that there is built into the existing ordinance, which you just told us to slightly revise, the alternative process so that if an applicant doesn't want to go through there, they go to this other, they go,
that's
to,
true.
The Board of Adjustment, they go to the Board of Appearance Commission, I'm sorry, for an alternative approval. That's there, that has nothing to do with the, I mean, procedurally, has nothing to do with the concept plan.
Okay.
This, a concept plan, is something that's entirely different and really would apply not just, in fact, to downtown projects, I don't think, but I think this would apply to any, I'm not sure that it's just limited to, let's see, yeah, special or conditional use permits, concept plans, would that apply to subdivisions, that apply to everything in all zoning districts. So it's really totally different.
But don't we have a, so how is that different than, don't we have a procedure for bringing forward a concept plan? I mean, we've seen several.
We just don't have
no this kind. No, the plan that you, the process that you have established right now is really one for not bringing concept plans per se. I think we call it this. We may have called it on occasion concept plan review. I'm not even sure about that, but
we call it courtesy review.
Courtesy review, right? Okay, and that's more for examining issues that typically are broader than a particular project, such as a developer doesn't know, begin to know how to develop something unless he knows where the access points are going to be, and you've got to connect a roads issue kind of thing. Or there's other elements like was brought to you the other evening about whether or not you want to have overhangs extended into the street. Mm-hmm. It's really broader than the project, but it's a policy decision that upon based upon how you might resolve those or get feedback from those, they would know what to do. Concept plan is really more in the line of bringing to you sort of a preliminary plan, so to speak, for a development plan. And we do not have a process for doing that right now. There's obviously some overlap between the two concepts, but this is a much broader, more routine kind of thing. The other thing that the so-called courtesy review happens rarely with respect to projects. This anticipates that all of the conditional and special use permit projects would participate in a concept plan review process, which doesn't, by the way, go to this board, but it requires them to go through a process here, really sort of as a new process, new procedure.
So with that clarification, to me it seems like a different enough and separate enough issue that I think it makes sense to consider it separately.
Okay.
And I do want to hear more about it, but I'm not convinced that I'm not sure whether I want to adopt it or not. But
I was just going to add or offer that the advisory boards have been routinely for really a couple of years inviting applicants to come for this, what they've been calling joint courtesy review. And it is typically, and Marty can correct me if I'm wrong, but prior to them submitting an application, a formal application, they're coming with these kinds of illustrative materials for a proposed project and getting this kind of feedback. And the subcommittee, and I think even in the larger work session, this was raised as a process that seems to be beneficial and seems to satisfy some concerns advisory board members had been expressing for several years prior to them starting this, which was they wouldn't see a project until it got to them for a recommendation prior to a public hearing. And they felt like if they'd had a little bit of time early on to kind of give some pointers about a few issues, they would have felt much more comfortable with the product. So this proposal that has come from the subcommittee is to basically formalize something that they are doing now, and if there's any assurance or feeling of more well-being, if the board wants to, you know, more strongly encourage us, what the staff did to get this into play was to tell folks who came to our development review meeting that the advisory boards wanted to meet with them as early as they possibly could to have this kind of opportunity to give them feedback. And that will continue and can be strengthened by your saying that you're supportive of this proposal or you want to see it turned into an ordinance or whatever. But we have been doing that for a couple of years.
Okay. So I suggest that we just stop talking about this because I think what we've adopted moves us in both directions, not exactly at the same time, and that's probably what we want to do.
So let me be clear. You do want to have this drafted then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
But not on the same time frame as the other. Okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to our Tuesday, May 16th, 2006 Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we continue with our regular agenda, I just want to mention two things. One is that this Saturday, May 20th, from 10 to noon at the Homestead Center on Homestead Road, we will be having a workshop on creating Carrboro's economic future. The public is invited and encouraged to come. We want to have a discussion about basically developing a vision and a plan for economic development in the town of Carrboro, and we'd really appreciate any of you who can come 10 to noon at the Homestead Community Center on Homestead Road in Carrboro this Saturday. There will also be another one Wednesday, May 24th, a week from tomorrow, at 6:30 p.m. at Carrboro Elementary School. So you can participate in either of those. That would be great. Is that right? Is there a translation service available?
I know that James Harris has been working to make that available.
Okay. We're working toward translation services being available. And the other thing is that also this Saturday is check out your local library day or something along those lines. And people are encouraged to visit the library, the Chapel Hill Branch Library, the Carrboro Branch Library, and the two other library sites in Orange County to learn about services available all day Saturday, May 20th. Okay, continuing on, we are on agenda item D4, resolution establishing policy on arrest for civil immigration violations. Very briefly, could you sum it up for us, staff?
Well, at you all's meeting on April 18, 2006, you directed the town attorney to research the issue of whether or not town's police officers are authorized or required to take into custody persons whose only known violation of law is or may be a civil immigration violation. The attached memorandum and resolution prepared by the town attorney are in response to the board's request. The purpose of this item is for the board to consider the adoption of a resolution establishing a policy for the police department to follow on this issue, and you should have at your places a revised resolution that the town attorney has drafted. And Mike, I'll leave it to you to explain what you've done.
I think the memo, you know, explains it. And again, thanks to Mayor Chilton for catching that the model, the national model that I had used from one national organization, probably needed to be modified. And I've drafted that in accordance with his suggestion, with some slight, very slight variation in wording. And essentially, what it, the bottom line on the thing is, it simply means that when, under circumstances where we would typically in a traffic stop or some other encounter, where we would not normally arrest a person for whatever violation, if it's a traffic stop for some kind of a traffic violation, like you've got a headlamp or a taillight out, is not normally, or even a speeding violation, are not things that you normally get arrested for. But on those occasions, there may be opportunities to do general searches into the computerized record system. We would nevertheless not arrest someone on the basis of these so-called immigration detainers, basically, if we learn about them, where the violation involved in those immigration detainers notices is a civil violation of federal immigration statutes. In other words, there is not an outstanding federal warrant in charging a criminal offense, but simply a request that a person be retained in custody to be held for the federal immigration authorities, but under circumstances where, as I explained in the memo, in my judgment, we do not have authority to take someone into custody for such matters because the state law doesn't give us that authority, does not authorize our law enforcement officers to take into custody, meaning arrest someone for a civil federal immigration violation. If this is not to say that we would not cooperate if the person were otherwise in custody or were otherwise arrested for some offense for which we do have authority to make an arrest. So it's just establishing a policy for the Carrboro Police Department.
So the upshot of this is that if somebody were in some type of criminal violation of immigration law, and so some type of warrant had been issued by the federal government, we would go ahead and arrest a person like that if we found them. But if it is strictly a civil matter that and there's no other reason for them to be detained or arrested, that we would actually follow North Carolina law and not take any action on detaining them.
Yes.
I would only add that I hope we're about to adopt this, and I think the point to add is that there may come a time when North Carolina law has changed somewhat, and where the federal immigration laws have changed somewhat to be significantly, really, to be a more just system in which we could be more in which we could feel that the scope of the project of helping out and enforcing similar immigration violations was something that was within the ability of our town to participate in. But for the time being, this is not something we're charged with being responsible with, and it's not something that we have the staff resources to deal with. So is there a motion on
move the item?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Board members, our next item is one that I need to ask you all to recuse me from. It's been moved that I be recused. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been probably moved and seconded. I'll be in the next room. The that I be recused on the next item. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. So the gavel passes to our mayor pro tempore.
Mr. Manager.
All right. This is the discussion of the rezoning proposal for the R3 district and the establishment and placement of an OR-MU zoning district. The board held a public hearing on March 28th and April 25th on a proposed rezoning for the R2 district. The board had requested additional information to consider in deciding on the proposed zoning change, and Trish McGuire is back at the podium to report on those changes. Trish.
Thank you, and good evening again. The board did hold a public hearing earlier this year to consider a rezoning proposal in the area shown and shaded on this map. It did propose to amend the zoning map to change the zoning for 7 properties that were currently zoned R2 to R75. They're shown in the hatched areas here, to rezone 13 other properties from R2 to ORMU. The property shown in green. The public hearing also included an ordinance that established this new zoning district and includes a number of provisions that would apply to the manner in which it could be developed. So in follow-up to the public hearing, the board at the conclusion of the public hearing, the board specified a number of things that additional information was requested on. We've reported on those 10 items in the agenda abstract. There's also a response in there to a letter that was received last week from a resident in the Carcourt neighborhood on several neighborhood issues. Mr. Bro has provided information on a meeting that he participated in with Mayor Chilton, with one of the property owners in the R2 zoning district, the folks who own the what I call the remainder site, the concrete plant, the rest of the concrete plant. Site that is the STGL, Limited Liability Corporation, and noted on some issues that those property owners raised during that conversation. There is an active conditional use permit application for that site. The staff has identified, we believe, most of the Hispanic residents in the Carcourt neighborhood. We have not yet contacted them. We found how they were contacted during the previous neighborhood meetings and so forth, but we have not yet had an opportunity to meet with them about this proposed rezoning. We did address, contact all the folks who attended the public hearings and provided comments to you all and invited them or notified them of your continued review of this issue tonight. And we communicated with them in a variety of formats. And I guess the last point is the zoning staff did, you may have noted that there was a staff comment in there about following up on checking the noise levels at the concrete plant. The information that was provided to you established what the baseline was when the non-conforming use out there was expanded and really modernized in 2000. And the zoning staff did work with the Chapel Hill Police to monitor this week the noise levels and found, as of this snapshot in time, that those noise levels were lower than the levels that were recorded in January of 2000. And Marty's here. He can tell you further about that if you have any questions. So based on the sort of the comments that were provided to Mike and to Mayor Chilton during the conversation with the property owner in the R2 and some outstanding issues about possible redevelopment proposals under some scenarios and other issues, the recommendation from the staff is for you this evening is to postpone any action on this draft ordinance until to allow some time for alternative development proposals to be developed, to be identified or noted for that area. Happy to try and answer any questions.
Are there any questions from the board other than the ones I have? Okay. I guess my first question is response to the sidewalk issue, and is it possible if in the second phase when we start again to have neighborhood meetings that particular sidewalk may potentially move up?
Which, are you talking about Eugene Street?
Yep. Well, no, actually I'm talking about Hargraves, not Eugene. I guess it's called, she calls it Hargraves? And
I don't think okay. Hargrave was on, that portion was not on the original list, was it, Dale?
Which portion of Hargraves?
Sure.
It is the part of Hargraves that has a blind curve and no shoulder except for a sloping, uneven strip of grass.
Yes, there already is a – we have received funding from NCDOT to construct a sidewalk on a portion of Hargraves. Let me get my bearings here. Okay. It would start – here at the intersection of Wesley and Eugene, and then on this portion of Hargraves, which I think is where the curb is that you're referring to, and then up Brewer, across the tracks to connect to an existing sidewalk here.
Now, and has Ms. Flora been informed of that? I'm sorry.
Not by me.
Okay. Then we might be able to kind of clear that up by just giving her a call or email.
It's the area south of there that's not...
Right. Yeah, the section south of here is not on our sidewalk master plan.
And she indicated that the neighbors didn't want sidewalk on the southern portion.
They just wanted on that portion that he just described.
That's in the works. I think we're process. We're trying to get the right of way squared away on that project, Dale.
There's right of way and temporary construction easements that. Need to be acquired. We do have the legal descriptions for those, and are prepared to go out and begin work to acquire those.
Which will mean the folks who want it will need to help us. With the right of way.
I think they probably will. Hopefully.
And Dale, we appreciate your apropos tie. I think that's very spiffy. Yes.
Thank you.
And then my other was just an information request. When I was on the board. Of Owassa, this is going back a while, there was a period of time where the entire rate base subsidized the extension of sewer in, I would say, five neighborhoods. One of them, to refresh their memory, is Mount Bolas, which is right behind the Chapel Hill Police Department. So if you could have them provide that information to you, that would be helpful. I think in kind of working our way to the sewer issue in Hargraves.
As to in what cases they did that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And one of those is, I know it was Mount Bolas neighborhood.
Pine Mountain.
Mm-hmm. Pine Mountain and one additional one that I can't remember what it is. But I think there were five. But it's been almost now 20 years, not 20, but 10 years ago. So in any event. Those are all my questions.
Okay.
or request. Dan?
My question is for Mike. So, Mike, is it your anticipation, or not necessarily anticipation, but thinking from the conversation that the landowner of STGL may come forward with a proposal under the existing zoning that that meets the town's interests?
No, my understanding is, in the gist of our conversation, was that, that there may be, I mean, as I said in the memo, I think we explained the concept behind the specific draft of the amendment, which was to include, provide for mixed use of that property, meaning some residential and some commercial. I mean, mixed use is not a self-defined term. It's defined in terms of this particular draft of the ordinance. And I think the gist of that conversation was that they were still felt it unlikely they could that they would be able to develop a viable project that complied with the specific terms of that amendment as it's currently drafted, but that there were things that they were certainly exploring doing that would accommodate the desire to have a mixture of residential and commercial uses. And so what they were about was to see what they felt like could be accommodated on the site in terms of that, possibly moving the Hunt Electric, possibly adding some additional commercial along with that. And looking at that, then we would take a look at it and see, well, how close does that to the draft of the ordinance, and does it come close enough, and see if there was some way that the ordinance could be drafted in a way that, that they felt they could live within it. They basically made it fairly clear that they did not think they could develop a project consistent with their objectives under the proposed draft that's currently before you, but felt that they might be able to come up with some alternative proposal that, while not meeting the exact terms of the existing ordinance, would meet the board's objectives, which would require some modification of the ordinance to bring everybody together in the middle somewhere. So that's where it was.
Is it likely that those changes would be at the level to require a new round of public hearings on this? I guess it might be hard to predict.
Don't know. Not necessarily. I mean, you know, the gist of the we'd have to see how extensive they would be. I mean, it may be tweaking the existing language, or it may be something slightly different. We'd have to see, since I don't know what they're going to propose, and how we would redraft the ordinance. But if it did. You know, it may or may not.
Okay.
I can't answer that until I know what they're going to be.
Alex?
I just want to get a sense of where we are. In my view, based on the input that we heard at the public hearing, the proposal that is on the table enjoys broad neighborhood support and achieves a series of policy objectives that we've set forward. I understand the interest in trying to be responsive, but what we're trying to do is establish, as a matter of policy, what kinds of uses and mix of uses are appropriate for that series of parcels. Based on that, I'm disinclined to delay action based on any pending permits or pending discussions about any individual development proposals, so that we can clearly lay out what the town's expectations are for that property and those properties, and give the adjoining neighborhoods a sense of closure, if you will, in determining what's going to happen there.
Jackie?
You know, staff's recommending that we delay it, but I don't see any time frame for the delay. So delay it till when? Is this something that we could close by break?
May well be. I had one conversation since this meeting with Simpson, and his indication was that there were sketches being drawn, but that they probably weren't going to be ready by this evening, and apparently, I mean, I don't know that they are. So I did not. I think the answer to your question is probably so. It could be done, you know, if the board chose to, if we got something the board wanted to look at and said, well, yeah, this is a concept that we could incorporate into an ordinance that, you know, so that this kind of thing that they're proposing, whatever that may be, would work, and we could do it without an additional public hearing, I would say, yes, we could get it before break. If it requires another public hearing, complete redrafting of the ordinance and another public hearing, perhaps not.
Well, go ahead.
I could support the delay if we could get it done by if we could get it done by break, because I think there's just too many people who have been held up.
What if we put the third meeting in June as the date this will come back, and we'll either have something else to look at or we'll vote on it? You okay with the office?
I kind of hate it, but if that's the will of the board, I'm not going to be the crank.
Well, if that affords enough time for an alternative development proposal.
I guess my concern is that the ordinance, as has been set forward, is crafted to set forth a series of expectations. I'm hesitant to try to redraft an ordinance to meet the expectations of a potential applicant or developer based on what their particular desires are, irrespective of what our policy goals are here in this regard.
How about this? They have until the third week in June that we require that whatever the potential amendment or change of the ordinance would be, subject to the fact that we wouldn't have to have a public hearing, that the neighbors would be consulted. Because here's my issue. I think everybody needs to be in the room at the same time when these discussions occur. That's just my opinion. Because if something radically different comes out that the neighbors cannot live with, then the expectations that they have with regards to this ordinance are sort of have, I think, a negative effect, but that's just my inclination. And in a month, I think you can get people together. So that would be my request, unless that violates our laws. And then I'd say...
It does not. In terms of what they're talking about is a possible change in a draft ordinance. So, again, it's a matter of... as I'm looking at the ordinance, I'm rather suspecting that it can, if somebody held a gun to my head, I'd say I'd probably think it probably can be done without having another public hearing, depending upon but I don't know that.
Right.
So, I mean, we take a look at it, but.
I think my concern is the same as Joel's, in that as we begin to revise and rework, the neighborhoods have had a while to digest this. There have been community meetings. It's been discussed. And the neighbors have agreed that this is something they want to do. And if we come forward with something that is substantially different and there hasn't been a lot of time to digest it, it's really unfair to the neighbors to say that this is something that we presented, what you folks think, and again, after having a lengthy opportunity to think about it, decided, we can buy into this. If I were in the neighbor's position, I would be very skeptical. If the end result were one that might be substantially different than what's been presented so far. So that just
It would change the terrain.
I think we've done this right so far, and I think folks are pretty happy with how we've gone about it. And if we start changing the game at this point, people have a right to be pissed off.
So are you comfortable with the third week in June, Alex?
I am subject to, look at me, Alex, answering for him. I'm not Alex. Let me be quiet.
I agree with Joel.
And how about Joel?
Well, I was going to say and insert the neighbors, I think there needs to be a meeting between the neighbors and STGL prior to it coming back to us in June.
Sure.
I think I would make that a requirement.
Yes.
Okie dokie. Wait, do we have a motion?
I can't make the motion.
I know.
Do you need that in the form of a motion, Joel?
Do we need that in the form of a motion?
Well, it probably would be helpful so we're clear.
Okay. Moved and properly second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It passes unanimously.
Get us our mayor.
Has he left?
No. He's hovering.
Well, while he's hovering, any matters by the town clerk? I'm not going to wait on you.
Good.
Matters by the town manager?
No, ma'am.
Matters by the town attorney?
No.
Matters by board members? Okay. I saw Dan's hand go up and then Alex.
My matter has to do with the
voting rights for legal immigrants that we discussed at the legislative breakfast on Friday. And I guess everyone's aware that John's been taking a lot of heat for that because some of the reporting gave the mistaken impression that this was his thing. And I would like to suggest that we make a clarification that this is something this entire board put forward and why. And I drafted a letter to that effect. And I apologize for not getting a copy to everyone beforehand, but I needed to touch base with Mark to make sure I could do this tonight. And anyway, blah, blah, blah. Didn't happen. So you have other copies. Let me pass this down.
Okay.
And I'll give a copy to the clerk as well. And basically, what I'm expressing here is, you know, my sense of why we're doing this. And I'm not wedded to any of this language. And my thinking is that this would be a letter that could either be signed by the mayor on our behalf or by the, you know, on behalf of the entire board, however we normally do such things. But I felt like also rather than a non-directed resolution, you know, I thought the form of a letter, you know, those are the people who we're really talking to about this, and that I want to make sure they are clear. And by expressing in this manner and doing it publicly, it also means that anyone who is paying attention, it will also be clear about what it is that the board is communicating to the legislative delegation in this regard.
This is immediate.
Yes, of course.
Well written, Dan. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I think it helps to clarify that we were all on board with it at the meeting.
You want to read it?
Well, it's
into the record.
Yeah. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah,
all,
if you would. Yeah.
Okay. I take the familiar form. Dear Ellie, Joe, and Verla, we write to clarify our position on the question of voting rights for legal immigrants in Carborough. In particular, we wish to ensure that you understand, contrary to what has been conveyed in certain news reports, that this initiative comes from our entire board as a means to further social justice, civic participation, and inclusion in Carborough. In addition, we want to make sure you're aware of the following. For the first 150 years of U.S. history, non-citizen voting was the standard. Only with the anti-immigrant sentiments of the early 20th century was it outlawed. Non-citizen voting is in place in many U.S. cities, including Washington, D.C., Chicago, and a number of smaller cities. Initiatives like ours are underway around the country. Non-citizen voting is used throughout the European Union as a way of integrating mobile populations into their new communities. It is also used in Israel, New Zealand, and Chile. We view our request as one of granting voting rights to those who already exercise citizenship in the broad sense, those who work in Carborough, pay taxes, and participate in local affairs and the public school system. Some are veterans of our armed services. Extension of voting rights recognizes their commitment to Carborough and removes an actual and psychological barrier to participation. As elected officials, it is easy to take voting rights for granted as a minor part of our political engagement. But for those who lack that right, the resulting sense of disenfranchisement can begin to pervade their sense of connection to the broader community. Consider, for example, how the issue of voting rights for 18-year-olds resonated during the Vietnam War. Like other North Carolina communities, Carborough has a large immigrant population. They are integrated into our economy and our polity. It is our belief that our community will be better off if those on the path to U.S. citizenship are granted the opportunity to vote in municipal and school board elections. We appreciate your continued consideration of this issue. We will continue to refine our position and look forward to continuing this discussion with you next year. No changes except one typo somewhere.
Okay.
I saw it when I read it, but anyway, I'll find it when we're done. So.
Okay.
Do we need a motion to?
I'll second.
Send Dan's letter on.
Absolutely.
Okay.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It passes unanimously. Let's see. Alex, you were next.
Just a real quick note, which is of absolutely no substance, but pleasant to note in any case. Just want to welcome a new business to town, Milltown Bistro on Main Street. They had all that paper up to hide the extraordinary work that they did with that wretched old building that used to be Orange Plumbing. And it's really a nicely done restaurant and bistro. They're open until 2 o'clock in the morning. They have an extensive menu, an outdoor patio.
Killer French fries.
Killer fries, yeah. So, yeah, check it out. Great great new place.
Great.
Welcome to Carville.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
To the Millhouse Restaurant.
Yeah. Milltown.
Sorry, that's very
All those in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All those in favor,